So welcome to the INSS podcast. We are broadcasting from the INSS 12th annual conference in Tel Aviv. And with us now is Ambassador Martin Indyk, Distinguished Fellow and Director of Executive Education at the Council on Foreign Relations, former US Ambassador to Israel twice, and US Special Envoy for the Israeli-Palestinian negotiations in 2013 and 2014. And I will also mention that Ambassador Indyk is a member of the INSS Board of Directors. So, given that introduction, and I actually want to start the interview by plugging into your words at the end of the last panel that you participated in regarding the Gulf. The panel ended with the interviewer's question about an imaginary scenario where MBS would come to Jerusalem, and your answer was that he won't come to Jerusalem until there's some kind of a progress or at least a commitment, a US-Israeli commitment, to establish a Palestinian state.
With Jerusalem.
With a capital for the Palestinians
Eastern Jerusalem. Capital, yes. And given what's actually happening on the ground now, where we see that the United States has pulled funding from UNRWA and USAID and many more developments along that line, and we see that the Palestinians are not accepting the United States as a mediator anymore, my question to you is, where is all this going? And how can the United States perhaps play a more constructive role?
Well, it's a good question, and thank you for having me on the podcast. I think that the deal of the century, the Trump peace plan, which we've all been waiting with bated breath for the last 2 years or more, is now really stuck. Even though the President Trump has declared that he's going to bring it out in 3 months, that was some 4 months ago, the Israeli elections have now intervened, and so they put it on hold. But presumably after the Israeli elections, they'll be looking to bring it out again, and they will still be stuck because their actions in moving the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem, the way that they did it, in which they allowed for no Palestinian aspiration to have their capital of their state in Jerusalem, in East Jerusalem, where President Trump rubbed it in by saying that he had taken Jerusalem off the table, therefore making clear to the Palestinians that there was nothing left for them in Jerusalem, has given them the explanation and excuse to disengage from an American-led process. They take their stand on Jerusalem. It's high ground for them. And so they are out of the process. And any peace plan that is going to lead to an immediate rejection by the Palestinians is, by definition, dead on arrival. But they're even further stuck, because in the process, they drove the Saudis out of the game as well. The Saudis were a critical part of the Trump peace strategy. They were the ones who were supposed to pressure the Palestinians to accept less than what they're demanding, and to lubricate the deal with billions of dollars in support for the Palestinian entity, whatever it turns out to be in the Trump plan. And the Saudis, on the issue of Jerusalem, were also forced out of the process, not because of MBS, but because of King Salman, who considers Jerusalem very important, unlike MBS, and who has now made clear to Jared Kushner very explicitly that Saudi Arabia will not engage on the Trump plan unless there is a East Jerusalem as the capital of a Palestinian state based on the 1967 lines. And so they cannot move in the peace process with any expectation that either the Saudis or the Palestinians will engage unless they shift their position on Jerusalem. And here's the rub. To shift their position on Jerusalem will undo all of the advantage Donald Trump got domestically from pleasing the evangelicals, who are a critical part of his domestic base. At a time when the presidential elections of 2020 are now on the horizon, And already both sides, Republicans and Democrats, are gearing up for that. The idea that President Trump would allow for some Palestinian claim in Jerusalem is something that the evangelicals will not accept. And so, as I say, they're stuck.
So this is rather irreversible, if that's the case.
Well,
at least on the US side.
It's reversible, but only at political cost. And it's unlikely, given the way in which President Trump is a base politician and only plays to his base, it seems to me unlikely that he would shift in a way that could bring the Saudis back in and therefore put pressure on the Palestinians to re-engage.
So if this is the situation, what can Israel do, if anything at all, given this deadlock? I mean, we need US backing if US becomes irrelevant. What is it that Israel can do? And perhaps here I'll refer to the INSS plan that will be discussed later today in one of the panels, and that of course you're very well aware of. How can the plan, the INSS plan, be effective in this scenario, situation, development?
Look, I think that the INSS plan is an excellent plan for, in effect, an interim process. While the plan remains committed to the idea of a two-state solution in which an independent Palestinian state lives alongside a Jewish democratic state in peace and security, I think the beauty of the INSS plan is that it puts forward a series of steps that Israel can take on its own to advance the chances of a two-state solution. And those steps do not depend on a Palestinian response or a Saudi response or an American response, for that matter. Israel takes its destiny into its own hands. And that's why I think it's a very good plan. And I think that the next Israeli government would be well advised to adopt it. It will, of course, depend on what coalition is formed after the Israeli elections. I can't imagine that a right-wing government similar to the previous Israeli government would pursue this, because it involves a freeze on settlements beyond the barrier and handing over to the Palestinians areas of C, what's called Area C, which is under Israel's complete control at the moment, for Palestinian economic development. And I think those two things would not be acceptable to a right-wing government. But if you have a different kind of government, led by potentially by Bibi Netanyahu, but a more of a centrist government, then I think it becomes a very good blueprint, and it would get the United States out of its situation in which it's now stuck, because then the Trump administration could get behind an Israeli decision and cover its own political bases that way.
So if we sum up, the situation now looks grim. We're in a big problem, but it's not too late, and Israel can take its fate into its own hand and proceed to rectify the situation and emerge from the current deadlock.
Yes.
So it's not all pessimism.
I think that's exactly right. Israel is strong economically, militarily, diplomatically. Prime Minister Netanyahu, I noticed the other day, called Israel a rising world power. I think that's an exaggeration, and it doesn't do to exaggerate. Israel is a strong regional power. It has the ability to take its destiny into its own hands. It is no longer a small, weak, isolated country. And the one thing that holds it up in terms of the burgeoning relationships with the Arab world, with the Gulf Arabs, with its regional neighbors, is the lack of movement on the Palestinian issue. And so, you know, there's a huge strategic advantage from moving forward in a credible way, and a potential real danger that failure to move forward will one day blow, the situation will blow up, whether it comes from Gaza, or whether it comes from the West Bank, or whether it comes from both. And so I think it really does behoove Israel, in its own interests, to take matters into its own hands, and the INSS plan is a good blueprint for that.
Excellent. I think this is an excellent key to end off with. I want to thank you for joining us today. And to all our listeners, I urge you to follow the INSS website and look out for more podcasts and interviews. Thank you all.